debt as she understood it, the debts of friendship and duty. Clara's father seemed to be caught in a shifting miasma of paper debts, penalty clauses, interest, dividends, and fines. "It's all politics." Clara shook her head, her victory on the blade path washed away. "I'm scared he'll die in there. It's not a good place. Rats and disease. And his main creditor has filed for 20 lashes and more fines." "I hope he's all right." Nona reached out to touch Clara's shoulder. "I'm sorry I shouted at you." Clara managed a grin, eyes bright. She stuck her tongue out, turned on a heel, and hurried off to meet with Sister Flint and the other novices allowed into Verity with an escort. Nona kept at her blade path practice until lunch, with others coming and going. She had 10 tries and got no further than a third of the way. The pipes swung wrong, the sections revolved wrong. The whole thing was just wrong. No matter how slowly she took it, how carefully, the ground just kept reaching up to claim her. She joined the others at the grey table, last to lunch, which had never happened before. Clara sat alone at the far end of the table, staring at nothing over a bowl of soup. Nona went to join her. "How did it go?" Nona reached for bread and started to ladle soup from the great glazed bowl between them. "Family's important, isn't it?" Clara's gaze didn't move from the nothing that had trapped it. "Well," Nona thought back to her mother and felt the muscles of her jaw bunching. "It should be." "My mother's not a strong woman," Clara said. "You'd think she would be, but she really isn't." "Oh." Nona wasn't sure how long this conversation had been going on without her. "There was a time when she was my world. When I was a little girl, I used to lie in bed crying because I thought she might die, and I didn't know how I would exist without her. Sounds stupid, but I did." "Have..." Nona put her spoon down, unused. "Has something happened to your father?" "They're going to let him go," Clara said. She walked her penny across the back of her knuckles. "All debts written off."
"Well, that's brilliant," Nona said. "Isn't it?"
"It is." Clara smiled, but only her mouth made the effort. She walked the penny back again.
"That?"
Nona saw that it wasn't a penny, not Clara's old copper penny, nor the silver crown that replaced it.
"That's gold!"
"Yes," Clara vanished the sovereign into her habit. "I took a penny, and I bred it into a multitude."
"Well,"
Nona met Clara's gaze,
"that's great news."
"Yes," Clara looked away and picked up her spoon. "I wonder how far Yisht has got to go before she reaches the coast." After lunch, Nona returned to Blade Hall and the site of her most repeated failure. She joined the others practicing and carried on failing. Later in the afternoon, Sister Kettle came to watch them. She stood at the bottom and worked the timing lever for them, watching 20 novices fall in a row before Sessa from Holy Class came and completed a run on her first try. 180, Sister Kettle read from the dial. Nona tried next and fell off after a count of 30. She'd barely made it to the spiral before a counterweight swung and the pipe lifted beneath her.
69, she gasped as she dropped from the net to land beside Sister Kettle. "How did you do it?"
Sister Kettle shrugged and grinned.
"I ran."
"Not helpful," Nona scowled.
"And Sister Owl, 26. That must be a lie.
Or she ran faster." Nona trudged up the stairs. Other novices came and went, but towards evening the press began to slacken off. An hour later, only Ruli and Nona were left. The others, perhaps driven off by the foulness of her temper, had gone to the bathhouse before bed to soak off their efforts on the blade path. Nona stood scowling at the twisted pipe.
"It's ridiculous. It's just metal and wires. Why did we spend so long at this stupid game? Doesn't mean anything.
Isn't that what games are for? Wasting time?
Ruli shrugged.
Besides, Sister Kettle says it's more than a game. So does Sister Pan. Perhaps if you think of it as a game, that's why you're not winning.
You think I should make it life and death? Nona asked. Stop it being a game?
I could cut the net down.
That would make it matter. Fall and die. There hadn't been a safety net when she had gone up against Yisht in the tunnels, or Raymel in his chambers. I should cut the net.
Ha ha! Ruli laughed without humor. We should go.
You should go, Nona replied.
Come with me.
Ruli looked worried.
I'll be fine.
Fast, furious, and without reservation, that was how battle was. That was how the most crucial struggles of Nona's life had been.
Let me try a few more times on my own.
Ruli glanced at the door, ducked her head, and started towards it.
Wait, Nona said before Ruli left the platform. Give me that grease of yours.
Ruli frowned, but reached into her habit and handed over the small earthenware tub.
Don't do anything stupid.
Nona waited for Ruli's footsteps on the stairs to fade away.
Fast.
She stared at the tarry soles of her feet. Without reservation. That was how she had arrived at the path, swift with anger. And she always tried to slow, and always fell. But perhaps she didn't fit the convent's measure. Perhaps she couldn't bend to fit their mould. She began to pick the tar and resin from the sole of her left foot. When she came to the blade path wrapped in serenity, she fell serenely. She put more care in, went slower, fell. Sister Kettle had completed the blade path in 69 counts. She must have run.
Sister Owl in 26, the legend said.
She must have flown. Nona started to clean her other foot. 10 minutes later, she set the pendulum swinging and stood at the edge of the platform, staring at the pipe an inch before her toes.
No,
she backed away, backed some more, backed another step, and her shoulders met the door.
No.
She opened the door and retreated down the steps.
Fast.
Without reservation. Nona came up the steps at speed, toes curled for grip. She came through the doorway, accelerating into a sprint. She leapt and hit the pipe with both greased insteps. She slid, gravity seizing her, accelerating her with terrifying swiftness. And now, at last, she dived into the moment, letting the pendulum crawl between its ticks. Nona shot towards the corkscrew turns. There are some things that must be done quickly, or not at all. If someone asks you if you love them, you cannot hesitate. There are some paths that must be taken at speed. Nona began to rise with the curve, her feet running before her, and for the first time, although it felt very far from safe, it felt right. Bray's lingering chime chased Nona from the arch of Blade Hall out across the courtyard. She raced down the dark alley alongside the laundry and came slipping and sliding around the corner just as Soleri was reaching to close the dormitory's main door. The door wouldn't be locked, but anyone arriving after Soleri, now the convent's senior novice, closed it, was counted as late to bed, their crime recorded on the records delivered to Avis Glass each 7 day. Soleri, new to her power, wasn't inclined to leniency.
Wait!
Nona leapt up the steps and ducked under the novice's arm, skidding so fast along the corridor she almost passed the door to Grey Dormitory. Soleri banged the door shut.
You're not wearing shoes, Nona!
Nona didn't deign to reply. It wasn't something she'd failed to notice. She banged through into the Grey Dorm hall.
Guess what?
We're going on the ranging tomorrow, at first light. Ara turned from the conversation she had been having with Mally by the door.
Huh? We are?
Nona looked around the room. All the novices had ranging coats either laid out on their beds or wrapped around them.
Your coat's on your bed.
Sister Flint brought them round. There's an oilskin, too. Nona hurried to her bed, excitement at the prospect of actually getting out of the convent for once, driving her own news from her thoughts. Sister Tallow had taught them the basics of making a shelter the previous year. Though the lessons now seemed a very long time ago, and the details frighteningly vague.
"Do you remember anything about navigation?"
"No," said Clara, bent over her coat, having some sort of problem with the toggles.
"Where are we even going?"
Nona picked up her own coat, a heavy black thing that would hang around her ankles. It looked as fine a garment as she'd ever worn. But where she came from, when the ice wind blew, you found shelter and hid. Warm as the range coat seemed, she didn't relish the prospect of open miles with nothing between her and the ice wind, except cloth and padding.
"Do we know our target yet?"
"We're all aiming for the Kring," Clara tugged, and a wooden toggle came away in her hands.
"Piss on it!"
"The what?" The name had something familiar about it. Something from Nana Even's tales.
"You should know. I was relying on you to get me there."
Clara pressed the toggle back where it came from, as if it might magically reattach.
"It's up past the grey, a thing the missing left behind. A column of black iron taller than a tree and as wide."
"I've heard of it," Nona frowned. She remembered the description now, but nothing else. She wondered if Yisht's amulet, cold in her pocket, had been cast from the same metal.
"What's it for?"
"The answer to that is missing." Clara threw down the toggle and spat.
"Anyway, the ranging isn't about navigation or even surviving the wind. We can ask directions. We can even beg shelter. Who's going to refuse a novice of the ancestor?"
She framed her face with her hands and batted her eyelashes.
"It's about surviving them."
"Who?"
"Them." Clara waved her arms around. "Everyone else. The world. Abbath. It's full of hungry people. And hungry people are dangerous people."
"I think..." Nona trailed off. Zol was walking towards them, with purpose.
"Where is Yisht?"
Zol regarded them without emotion, her black eyes startlingly similar to the warrior's.
"I've no idea," said Clara. "We were discussing it just now. She can't be much of a bodyguard if she can't guard her own body, can she?"
"If you have done something..."
"Yes, yes," Clara waved her away. "You'll show us a fancy move from the talker, and then Nona will turn you inside out. Now push off, why don't you?"
Zol gave them both a look that managed to be both calm and threatening at the same time, then turned and went back to her bed.
"I hope we lose her on the ranging," Nona watched the Ice Triber go.
"Most novices band together by the end," Clara said.
"We can split into our own groups in the first days. We're all headed to the same place, so it gets crowded towards the target."
Nona shrugged, pushed her ranging gear off the bed onto the floor, and started to strip out of her habit. A minute later, she was under her blanket, and a minute after that, dreaming. Sister Flint gathered Grey class after breakfast the next day. Hessa said her goodbyes as they left the refectory. She gave Nona a one-armed hug, and Nona took it woodenly, never having grown accustomed to the business of hugging.
"Be safe out there," Hessa said.
"It's the ranging. There's no safe about it." Nona made her mouth into a smile.
"Well, be careful," Hessa released her. "If you fall off a cliff and break your arms, I'm going to know all about it."
"You'll have a chance to work on breaking that while we're away," Nona said. "And if you can't do that yet, then at least make it so we can share good experiences rather than just bad ones. Don't send me your nightmares. If I'm lying shivering in a snowbank somewhere, I want you to go for a soak in the bathhouse and for me to be the one that gets warmed up."
"I'll try," Hessa grinned. "I'm going to miss you. I'll be lonely here without you lot."
At least you won't have to race Nona for the last potato every night.
Ara hugged Hessa and drew Nona away. Sister Flint was waving them to the exit.
Follow the path, Hessa called after them, leaning on her crutch. If you get lost, follow the path. That's what it's there for.
The nun took them to the abbess's house, where they stood hunched against the ice wind in their ranging coats. The novices all had their weather blankets and bundled supplies on their backs. Nona had been issued with a short skinning knife, 2 wire traps, a tinderbox, and a small iron pot.
I'm freezing already, Clara said from inside her hood. Who's that?
Ara pointed to a figure coming around the side of the abbess's house.
It's a man.
Julius sounded shocked.
Tarkax, Nona said.
The warrior wore the same black sealskins and fur jacket he had worn at the Kaltas, and seemed unbothered at being in the teeth of the gale. He grinned at the ladies, his teeth a white slash in a dark red face.
Lovely day for it, ladies.
And skirting their huddle, Tarkax went up the stairs to knock on the abbess's door. Moments later, Abbess Glass emerged, swaddled in padded robes, the hand around her crozier hidden in a thick black mitten. Sister Tallow followed her out in a ranging coat.
Novices,
Abbess Glass had to shout above the wind.
This will be a great test for you, but one in which I am sure you will all do well. Sister Tallow and Sister Flint will have trained you in the skills required to reach your target. It remains for me to remind you that no matter what conditions you may face on your ranging, no matter what the trials, you are representatives of the Church, ambassadors of the faith, and most of all, novices of Sweet Mercy Convent. I expect you to act accordingly. And remember, if anyone lays a hand on you, you have my permission to cut it off. Be safe. Sister Tallow will be waiting for you at the Kring.
She made to head back into the warm glow of her entrance hall, then turned, remembering.
I have with me the renowned warrior and tracker Tarkax, also known as the Ice Spear. Tarkax will be acting as Novice Zol's bodyguard in Yisht's unexpected absence. He will not be aiding her on the ranging, unless in exceptional circumstances.
She turned and went back into her house, shutting the door with a thump that had an air of finality about it.
The Ice Spear, Jula almost squeaked. I've read about him.
You have not,
Darla hulking above the scribe's daughter.
I have too.
Jula looked up at Darla through the tunnel of her hood.
He's famous. He's in the story sheets they sell in Verity on 7 Day outside the Abbon Library. The Ice Tribes have songs about him.
Nona turned and leaned into Ara. He works for Partnus Reeve, I'm sure of it.
Which makes him a Taxis man, said Ara.
On Nona's other side, Clara leaned in.
Don't Thurin Taxis and Shazal hate each other?
They certainly haven't been friends these past few years. Zol must be horrified. Ara didn't sound displeased, and although Nona couldn't see her face, she knew the Chosen One would be smiling. Ara didn't bear grudges, but the Emperor's sister and everything associated with her was the exception to that rule. Clara pulled at Nona's arm.
If he's Taxis, then you might reconsider how you feel about Zol. The enemy of my enemy may be my friend.
She shrugged.
Of course, the friend of my friend is often a jerk.
She jabbed a black-gloved thumb surreptitiously in Ara's direction. Sister Tallow came down the steps, raising her hand for the novices to gather around her. Nona came to stand by Tarkax, and he looked down at her and grinned.
My friend from the Kaltas.
You told me you were a ring fighter, Nona said.
Tarkax raised his hands, one to the east,
One to the west.
And what is the corridor if not a ring?
You lied to me. Nona scowled.
Pay attention to your nun.
Tarkak slapped her around the back of the head without malice.
From where we will journey to the starting station on the margins of Harren Fens. After that, you'll be on your own.
Sister Talu looked around the group, then led off along the cart way. Nona followed, rubbing the back of her head and wondering how Tarkak's got a name as silly as the Ice Spear.
I don't know how any of us is going to survive this, Jula said.
The grey-class novices had been trudging along behind Sister Tallow for several hours, and Jula had expressed the same thought in at least 8 different ways since they came down off the Rock of Faith.
Grey-class goes ranging every year, Jula. Croy has been 3 times. She'd been in the class a week the first time.
Ruli seemed happy to be out and on the move, her cheeks red, her eyes bright.
But we've had no training, Jula limped on, complaining that her shoes were rubbing.
We've had some, Ara said, and this is training.
Stop whining, Jula, Clara trudged on without looking left or right. It's quite unusual for anyone to die on arranging. They came into the open from a small valley, and the ice wind caught them by surprise, howling across an expanse of barren fields. Nona staggered before, leaning into the blast. 2 novices ahead of her were driven to their knees. Tarkax just bent his head and went strolling along behind Zol as if it were nothing more than a stiff breeze. Midday saw them huddled in the lee of a cattle barn, with the sun dominating the sky above them, huge and crimson, but offering little heat. And what it did give, the wind snatched away the moment it arrived. Nona munched her bread and cheese, staring at nothing, her mind on Raymel Taxus. Had it been his hand behind the shadow worker's attack at the academy, or had the senior academic's protest been genuine? Had some enemy within the church itself set Marcus or his friend to drive the girl mad with rage? She couldn't think it was Marcus. But perhaps for him, Giljon's cage was just a memory, a dry fact that could be taken out and studied without emotion. Thurin Taxus had sworn in court, sworn before the Emperor's throne, that the matter was finished. Her name, Nona Grey, had been spoken in the Emperor's hearing. Her mother would be... Nona shook the thought away. She had been covered in blood when she had left the village, and though the blood had long since been washed away, the stains would never be gone.
They say there's trouble on the coast.
Darla broke across Nona's thoughts.
Trouble?
Nona recalled the pirate raids. Without them, Shazal wouldn't have dared come to Verity and risk her brother's displeasure.
The Durnish have come in force, regular troops on the pirate barges, just not in uniform. And Kruskal summoned General Cathrad from the Skithrol border.
Nona looked up at Darla.
How do you know this stuff?
It was normally Ara who knew things about the world.
My father's an officer on Cathrad's staff. He's come ahead of the general to gather intelligence.
Darla nodded.
He says corsairs have come ashore and sent raiding parties along the northern ice, while the Emperor and Valera are tied up around Honnesport.
So don't go too close to the ice, then.
Not unless you want to join in the war,
Darla said.
We're at war?
Nona hadn't realized it was that bad.
We're always at war.
Darla shrugged.
As long as the ice is closing, we'll always have war. That's what my father says. The only difference is what they call it. Right now they're calling it raids. The church will have to play its part.
What did you think has been keeping the Abbess so busy? They say she's even been to court.
And they're sending us out ranging in a war? Nona asked. Darla shrugged again.
Technically, we'll be fleeing a war. The Kring is in the opposite direction. That's probably why they picked it this year. Last year we had to get to Hearn's Island off the coast, And anyway, the ranging is one of the oldest parts of a nun's training. They say the training fits the times. If it's open war ahead of us, then it's not so surprising they send us out in this.
Marching down the tracks and lanes of the Empire's heartland brought back memories of travelling with Giljon, though the roads he had chosen were more obscure, and there had been far less walking involved. Even so, when the ice wind blew, everywhere took on that same bleak look. It wasn't without a certain beauty to it. A thin screed of icy snow covered the fields, hiding the crops. Most would recover. Farmers grew the breeds that would. But some would always gamble on a long enough stretch of corridor wind to sow and harvest something more valuable and vulnerable. The hedgerows stood thick with ice, coating every twig, blunting the thorns, glistening, gleaming, surreal, holding everything behind glass for observation, not to be touched, put in storage. For a while. One day, it would be forever. In the woods, screw pine and frost oak stood, hung with icicles, a multitude of them, hanging thickly from every limb, some longer than Nona's arm. At the height of the ice wind, the focus couldn't wholly melt the ice, and every night the icicles would grow and multiply, until the wind finally relented, or the great weight of the ice tore the tree apart. Men had died passing through forests in the ice wind. When the focus came, every branch of every tree could shed a man's weight, and more, in yard-long icicles in minutes, turning any wood into a nightmare of plunging ice spears. By evening they'd passed the town of Averine, and come over a low range of hills to a ridge from where they could see the river rattle snaking its way towards the Marne. Sister Tallow found them lodging for the night in a hay barn close to the river, and the unimaginatively named village of Bridge that sat on both sides of a long stone-built bridge spanning the rattle.
"You know why they call it the rattle?"
Jula asked as Nona worked herself in amongst the hay.
"No.
2 years ago a hay bed would have felt like luxury. Now it was sharp and itchy, and the barn an icebox. Sweet Mercy might have armed Nona with many of the arts of war, but it had made her soft in other ways. The ranging was an overdue lesson, one that she intended to pay close attention to.
When the melt surge comes down, that's just before dawn here, the waters run so fast that all the stones in the riverbed rattle over each other. I read it in Henan's Geographical History of the Quantal Sea."
Jula wriggled against a hay bale, frowning.
"I'm not going to be able to sleep here."
"Try," said Nona. "You're unlikely to get a better bed tomorrow night." The convent had chartered a boat to bear the ranging party to Harren Fens. It looked to Nona like the rowing boats the fishermen used on the White River, only 10 times as long. It had a tall mast folded into the length of its hull, and a sail wrapped tight. Both would be raised for the return journey upstream. But to bear the novices to the fens, the rattle's current was all that was required. Nona, Ara and Clara sat together in the prow, braving the weather. The winds, blasts, raised flurries of ripples across the river, driving them forward before overwhelming them and beating them flat again.
"I'm going to be something," Clara said, not looking at either of them.
"You are something," Nona said.
"I wasn't born to be a high sis. I'm not a two-blood with prophecies hanging off my shoulders. But I'm going to be something, whatever it takes."
"You sound as if you think we're in your way," Ara said.
Clara looked around as if noticing them for the first time.
"We're a new generation in an old world. It's all ours, for the taking."
She returned her gaze to the water.
"Just requires that you pay the price. That's how the world works, trade and loss. Supply, demand, prices to be paid. At least that's how it works for those of us who aren't born with fortune written in our blood.
You do things you don't want to do, for people you don't like. And you keep on doing them because you know that one day things will change, and you'll be the one doing the telling. I've got a plan. Can't see how all the pieces fit yet, or even what all the pieces are yet. She held her gloved hand out as if the components lay there in her palm. They're bright and sparkling and complex, but somehow I'll fit them all together, and on that day I'll break the world and make another. Ara snorted. You practicing a part for a play, Clara? Or have you been sniffing what's left of the stores Nona stole from the poisoner? Clara put her head down. Just saying what's on my mind. What's been on my mind for a long time. The ranging's a dangerous thing, whatever they tell you. Not everyone makes it back. So if you've got something to say, the boat's a good place to say it. Nona discovered that she didn't have anything to say, and they sat in silence. The boat dropped anchor alongside an icy stretch of beach, the bank behind rising in an earth cliff to overhanging sod and ice-rimmed bushes beyond. Jula was the first ordered ashore, jumping from the prow into the shallows. She looked a small and lonely figure, black against the shingle, waiting for the other novices as the boatmen struggled to keep their craft steady in the current. Ruli was next off, followed by a stream of her classmates. Nona followed Ara. The shingle gave onto earth before reaching the 6-foot bank. She scrambled up, muddy-handed. Before her, the land stretched out towards a desolate expanse of frozen mire, spotted with bulrushes in brittle stands. Tarkax came last, clearing the shallows with a leap from the side of the boat. He strode up the beach, grinning.
"I'm here to watch over that girl."
A loud declaration finger pointed squarely at Zol.
"You! You! And you!"
He jabbed at the cluster of novices atop the bank.
"I won't lift a finger for nuns, orders. Run into trouble and I'll watch you die. So pretend I'm not here."
He sprang up the bank in 2 bounds and ambled off to inspect the ground. Sister Tallow addressed the novices from the boat's prow.
"You'll need to get to the Kring within 4 days, novices."
Behind her, the boatmen busied themselves with the matter of turning their vessel about.
"The countryside will be dangerous. It's possible there will be Dernish raiding parties, but worse than them by far will be our own people. There's not much that's less predictable than a frightened peasant. They'll be on edge, suspicious, ready to strike first and without warning. Our people may also be your salvation. The kindness of strangers is often all that sustains us. If your groups are too large, you will be unlikely to find anyone to take you in. If they are too small, you will be vulnerable to the ill-intentioned."
The keel ground against the riverbed, and 2 crewmen with long poles worked to turn the boat as it nosed out into the current. Sister Tallow raised her hand in farewell.
"Ancestor, go with you, girls!"
"I hope the ancestor is bringing sacks of food and a warm tent." Nona managed a grin she didn't feel. Seeing Darla struggling to climb the wet bank, she jumped down to help, only to find herself ankle-deep in freezing slime.
"Bleed on it! I hate mud!"
Darla snorted a laugh and got up the bank by herself with a lunge. The crewmen leaned on their poles. The boatman turned the rudder, and with a shifting of shingle, the boat pulled forward into deeper water. The raised sail filled with the ice wind, and within the space of a minute, Nona could cover Sister Tallow, the crew, then the whole boat, all with one raised thumb at the end of an outstretched arm. Suddenly, very alone, despite her classmates grumbling on the bank, Nona looked down to see the mud starting to close over the tops of her shoes.
Damn!
Chapter 40. While the dozen novices argued over how many groups they should divide into, and which of them would be in which group, Nona took herself to the side and watched the river. She knew the direction they had to head in, east, down the corridor.
In the warmth of the convent, it had sounded simple enough.
You'll find your way easy. You grew up in the wild.
The latter had mixed scorn with jealousy. Nona hadn't bothered to explain that when you lived in the grey on the sharp edge of starvation, you didn't spend your days trekking through the wild. You spent it trying to scrape a living from the mean soil. The village had its hunters who took to the wild in search of game. But for every hunter with their forest craft, there were 10 farmers who knew how the winds turned and what to plant where, who had never gone more than 5 miles from the earth-floored hut where their mothers had brought them squalling into the world. When your path lay between 2-mile-high walls of ice, it sounded hard to get lost. But on the ground, with a forest rising about you, it was easy to wander a random spider's crawl, lost in the space of a few dozen acres, despite your best efforts to steer a straight course. The corridor might be a scant 50 miles wide, but walking it, with your view hemmed in by tree and hill, it might as well be 10,000 miles wide. Nona thought of the globe in Sister Rule's classroom. Abeth in white with its narrow girdle of colour, so thin you might miss it at first glance. So many things depended on perspective, on where you stood, and when. In her class, Sister Pan had shown the novices those drawings that the mind could see 2 ways, or 3, or even 4. Serenity, clarity, patience were all like that. Nothing changed except the way you looked at the world. 1 minute you saw it as you always had seen it, but with a mental step to the left, and with the right perspective, everything could flip. Everything could find a new interpretation. And in a moment, the whole world would change. Nona wondered if the same were true with the wider mysteries of the world. Could Abbess Glass look upon the tangled mess of church and court politics, on the complex web of favour and obligation, and with a small change in the way she saw it, a new emphasis on some seemingly unimportant interaction, suddenly perceive it with new clarity? See it as some simple engine that applying pressure here, pressure there, could drive in the direction of her desires? Were friendships like that? Could Nona step outside the mystery of her entanglements with Ara, and with Clara, and see from some new vantage something simple and understandable? Behind her it sounded as if things were being resolved. She would be with Ara, Clara, and Ruli. Jula with Alata, Lini, and Zol. With the others, in a third group. Argument resurged over the initial routes for each group. Nobody wanted to head through the fens. All 3 groups wanted to trek upstream to the pine forest they passed on the way, hoping to find sheltered paths through. The dispute took an hour to resolve, and Nona suspected that in good weather they would have wrangled for days.
"That looks bad," Darla raised an arm to the west.
A dark bank of cloud had been advancing on them for a while, but now they saw the white wall trailing beneath it.
"Ice storm." Zol scowled. "We should make for the woods."
She turned to go, ignoring protests that they couldn't all go that way.
"That looks worse,"
Nona squinted. There were figures, perhaps a dozen of them, advancing along the banks further downstream, running ahead of the storm, chesting through bushes.
"Derns,"
Ara joined Nona on the highest point of the bank.
"Are those spears?" "Run!"
Jula wasn't given to issuing commands, but everyone obeyed this one, even Tarkax. Moments later, the whole ranging party was sprinting towards the distant tree line. Nona kept her eyes forward, concentrating on the ground ahead. A squall took them all by surprise. One instant they were racing for the trees and the dark spaces between. The next instant the wind rose white about them, a howling swirl laden with sharp fragments of ice. Visibility reduced to arm's length, the wind's roar drowning out shouts and screams, buffeted and blinded. Nona swiftly lost any sense of direction. When a tree loomed at her, she barely avoided running straight into it. What followed was a nightmare of running and hiding and falling ice. Within 100 yards, the blindness of the storm had been replaced by the blindness of the forest, the pines so tight-packed that Nona could hardly squeeze between them. Dry branches raked her as she forced a passage. The wind's rage and the thrashing of treetops allowed only the edges of distant shouts to reach her. Imagination filled every shadowed space with Dernishmen, wild-eyed, knives and axes ready. When the storm relented, Nona found herself cold, exhausted, wet, and alone. She broke from the forest an hour later and tried to orient herself. Eventually, she found a trail and followed it. Nona trudged on, bowed against the wind, feet numb, in damp and muddy shoes. Here and there the wheel ruts lay full of brown water, rotten ice breaking beneath her tread if she put a foot wrong. Her eyes watched the road, her thoughts chased the others. Images rose of her friends skewered on Dernish spears. She shook them from her head. Ruli and Jula would run. Clara and Ara would feed a Dern his own spear. They'd be all right, and the best way to find them again was to head towards their goal. If they had fallen in the forest, she could wander aimlessly among the trees for a month, and still not stumble upon them. Nona followed the tracks with most evidence of recent traffic. She knew at this distance it was sufficient to head for the Grey, and that would be hard to miss if she kept generally east and a little north. She checked her directions to the next town with an elderly charcoal burner, located by the thin stream of his smoke slanting through the trees, and later with a farmer bringing a score of ragged goats in off the moor. The farmer offered Nona a place by his hearth, but she mistrusted his eyes, fever bright above high cheekbones. Neither man had word of her friends. Nona watched for more raiders. In fact, she watched for anyone at all. The charcoal man had wrung his soot-dark hands and warned of Dernish pirates marauding the fringes, killing the old and taking the young to sell in the flesh markets in Dern. But Nona didn't feel too unsafe. The raiders were at her back. With the ice wind blowing, all but the most desperate among the peasantry had taken a break from their labours to hide inside their homes, waiting for the weather to break. The corridor was never as empty as when the ice wind blew, and whilst the wind might carry a killing edge, at least it delivered a clear view of any stranger approaching bearing killing edges of their own. As the light failed and a new wildness infected the wind, Nona found a dry stone wall to shelter behind. It had been built as a windbreak for sheep, and several of the beasts huddled there when she arrived. They watched her, with goggling eyes, rectangular pupils, and wholly lacking in comprehension. But they soon reached an accommodation. She would ignore them, they would ignore her, and all of them would crowd together out of the gale. The wall was an ancient thing, perhaps older than the scraps of woodland close by, built in years when the wind blew too fierce for any tree to raise its head. Nona had considered making her camp in the copse that ran back along the stream, but the sheep preferred to keep clear of the trees, and she mistrusted the closeness of them, the slow knowledge of their growing and their endless creaking. Nona sat there in the gathering darkness, wrapped in coat and blanket with her back to the wall, and the moan of the wind across the slopes, and the singing of the wind among the trees, and the sharp whisper of the wind between the stones. Around her the sheep shuffled their cloven feet to press themselves close. The sky grew clear. She ate half of her remaining food, hard bread and a boiled egg, then went to sleep hungry. The wind spoke through her dreams, sometimes pulling her from them, only to release her into the next. And although each dream was different from the one before, some dark, some wild, some full of disconnected joy, a thread ran through them all, marrying one to the next. A single twisting line dividing and joining, running unbroken like the flowing script from Sister Kettle's quill, spelling out word upon word until the words became a river, and the river a story, and the story her life. The dream faded, so completely she could hardly be sure there had ever been a dream, but the thread remained, and the thread was the path, and the path led her to the moment. Nona opened her eyes. The eastern sky held the very faintest hint of a glow. She had slept through the focus moon, through the shifting and grunting of the sheep, through the wind and the sleet.
Somewhere in the night a bright sound had broken across the wind's voice, metal on metal. Nona moved slowly to her knees and peered through the gap between two stones at the top of the wall. To her left the ridge was a black suggestion against the darkest grey of the sky. To her right the field sloped down towards a thin stream and the straggling copse. By the tree line, a complication of shadow drew her attention. She watched, eyes narrowed. There's nothing so good as a night-dark forest for taking your imagination and giving it form. Nothing. Just black shapes and silence. Even so, one by one the sheep left the wall's shelter and trotted away along the slope, angling towards the ridge. Nona didn't follow. She had no reason to break cover, no reason to offer motion to any enemy who might be lurking. The dawn's light spread with agonizing slowness, touching one thing from black to grey, touching the next, making two branches from one threatening limb, making a half-fallen trunk from a silent and watchful monster. As the sun lit the ridge, it brought with it the suggestion of green beneath the thin and patchy ice, and still, though it advanced moment upon moment, the light failed to make sense of the dark tangle where the first trees stepped from the field. Nona drew a breath, sharp and cold, across her teeth. That fold was a man's knee, the next, an arm. That curve, a shield. Perhaps half a dozen of them lay sprawled in death, tangled amid the undergrowth, one hand raised among the thorny coils of the briar. What to do? Move on in ignorance? Investigate and accept the exchange of risk for knowledge? Nona scanned the ridge, then stared again into the stubborn gloom between the trees. Anyone could be watching. But why? She called on her clarity. In her mind she began to juggle, directing her hands to the task, guiding each ball through the necessity of its arc. First three balls, the pattern she saw Amondo try to teach the village children, then four, the pattern he employed while delivering his banter to an audience, drawing them in for his show, then the five, with which the juggler dazzled, and the six, with which he struggled, sweating and anxious, crowning his performance. By nine the world about her lay bound in crystal, no contrast enhanced, no shadow lightened, no detail magnified, the same, but different. She stood and everything around her shouted out its meaning. Every part of the puzzle yielded its secrets. She walked in a clarity so fierce it burned her eyes. Nothing had changed. Yet everything had, and the world no longer held a place to hide from Nona Grey. There were five men lying dead, warriors all, raiders from their garb and the salt stain still bedded in their cloaks. Nona approached on slow feet, the mystery of the forest unfolding before her. The attacker had killed them with thrown daggers and a thin sword. Precise blows, no frenzy, no mercy. The slaughter had begun among the trees and ended at the margins. Nona came closer. Close enough to smell the rankness of the dead men, the blood, the unwashed stink of travel, the sewer stench that gives the honest and undignified truth of sudden death on a sharp edge. Ice-rimmed blonde hair scattered across blue eyes, sword and axe lay unattended, some hands open and white, some clenched around a last moment of agony, dark with gore. No breath misted from them. Nona snagged the loop of a pack with her toe and drew it closer. She took the dried meat and hard biscuit out of its wrap of oiled cloth and added it to the crumbs of her own supplies. Still ravenous, she reached for another pack and froze. Out of the depths of her clarity, a single fact rose to take her by the throat. Somewhere close, another human heart was beating. From what evidence this fact had been assembled, Nona couldn't say. She knew only that it was true. She stood watching the silence of the trees and of the shadowed spaces between them. The raiders had been moving through the edge of the copse where it reached back along the stream. They had been attacked as they moved to leave, aimed at the sheep wall where Nona had been sleeping. 10 yards past the first splash of the raiders' blood, Nona left their trail, written in the patchy ice and half-frozen mud, to strike deeper into the forest. She tore through bramble, broke a path among the sharp and brittle branches of the stunted Ardna bushes where they grew thick between the elms. To her own ears she sounded like an army on the move. Every instinct told her to leave, to carry on along her path, reach the target and leave this mystery for others. But why would anyone lie in wait for her in a freezing wood when they could have found her sleeping? Nona saw blood on the leaves first, then blood against the trunk of one tree, smeared across another, then the boot, then the leg, then coming around the bole of a great frost oak, the body, sitting propped up against the tree, head down, face hidden within the hood of a convent ranging coat. She stood, suddenly terrified, her heart unwilling to beat. A moment later, what she had taken for her sixth corpse of the morning rolled its head back.
"Hello, Nona."
Sister Kettle watched her, eyes dark in a pale face, the blood around her mouth a shocking crimson, the smile that was always there, there no longer.
"Kettle!"
Nona rushed to crouch beside the fallen nun.
"What?"
The white hand clutched around a knife hilt stole her words. The blade jutted from Kettle's side, the coat below glistening with blood. The pommel, an iron ball, was all that showed of the knife. The rest was lost in her grip.
"Little Nona,"
Sister Kettle discovered her old smile.
"You found me?"
She coughed, sputtering scarlet, her lips very red.
"Oh, I shouldn't do that."
A grimace.
"It hurts."
Nona found her eyes misting, one hand on Kettle's shoulder, the other in her hair.
"You'll be all right. You'll be all right. You need to run, little Nona."
Kettle's eyes scanned the trees, her head unmoving.
"No."
Nona shook her head.
"You killed them. They're all dead. I checked. That wasn't me."
Kettle licked her lips.
"You don't have any water."
Nona bent and started to dig out her canteen.
"That wasn't me,"
she smiled.
Natural hazard. I wouldn't have stopped them finding you. All part of the ranging. Tough break, but these are tough times, Nona." "Who did it, then?"
Nona glanced around while she held the canteen to Kettle's mouth. The clarity had left her in a moment, taken by shock when Kettle raised her face.
"Noi Gwyn. That's why I was set to follow you." "Why?"
The words sat in front of too many questions, and Nona couldn't pick which one to ask.
"Wanted you for herself. Proud. These Noi Gwyn. A small girl escaped 2 years ago. Wasn't going to let that stand, no matter what promises Thurin Taxus might have made the Emperor. Where is she?"
Nona's gaze returned to the knife in Kettle's side. She had held its twin, pulled it from her bed.
"Her hurt."
Kettle showed her teeth red with blood.
"Got her good, but she ran."
She winced.
"You have to run, too. She could come back. Others with her."
"I'm not going." Nona hunted for a reason.
"I'm safer with you." "No, they don't know where you're going. They trailed us from the convent or knew we land the novices along the rattle, but the target's always different. Cover your tracks and head north away, then make for the Kring. You should be able to catch up with Ara. She's safe. Sister Apple is shadowing her. Takes more than a storm to shake Apple off."
"Apple, are we all under guard?"
Nona frowned. Even now, with blood dripping from the trees, it felt wrong, like cheating.
little, Nona.
Kettle grinned as if reading her mind.
Not all, just you. Because of the assassins. And Ara. Because of her father. And the Chosen One. And the Chosen One?
Nona frowned. Kettle spat blood.
Appy will kill me, but...
She shrugged. Winston glanced down at the knife.
She'll have to hurry. What do you mean? Arabella's not the Chosen One. You're not either.
Kettle put her hand on the one Nona had on her shoulder. It felt like ice.
You're both shields, if you like. It's soul. She's a straight-up, certified four-blood.
And a tear rolled down Kettle's cheek.
Stepped out of legend. She's come to save us, Nona. I know it. Zol?
Nona blinked, wondering if Kettle had grown delirious.
That's what convinced the abbess of Sherzal's good faith, Kettle said. She put Zol into the church's care, with Yisht to guard her. Yisht has a great reputation for her skills, and now Zol only has Tarkax. The Ice Spear's reputation is greater still.
Kettle drew a sharp breath.
And nobody knows Zol is the Chosen One. If anyone is out hunting, it's Ara they'll be after.
Kettle fell quiet for a long moment, long enough for the questions to start crowding in on Nona. How could she help? Could she drag Kettle if she made a travois from branches? The raiders had rope.
You have to go, Kettle broke the silence. Run. Find Ara.
I'm not leaving. Nona sat back on her haunches, arms folded.
It's not a request.
Another breath hitched past gritted teeth.
In the absence of the abbess or senior sister, I represent the convent's authority.
I'm still not going.
It's a direct order.
Kettle furrowed her brow.
In the name of the ancestor.
Nona shrugged.
I've never been that convinced by this ancestor business. I prefer the Hope Church myself, or perhaps the Tunnel Gods. Nona!
Kettle tried to sit up and fell back with a gasp.
This is serious. You have to go. The Noi Guin will call others.
Nona shrugged again.
I'll kill them if they come.
She paused, thinking over Kettle's words.
How would your wounded assassin call for help? They're shadow workers. She could reach out to another if they had the bond. How far? It depends. A mile? 10? Most shadow workers could send a simple call for help, a fair distance.
So call her.
Who?
Nona leveled a narrow stare at Kettle.
Sister Apple. But Arabella... The Noi Guin want me, not her, and they'll track me from here if I run. So we need someone here to stop that happening. And if Ara needs protecting, well, I'm the shield, aren't I? I passed the ordeal, you didn't. But...
Call her! Nona shouted it.
I don't want her to see me die!
Kettle shouted it back. Nona sat back stunned.
You're not going to die!
The words came rough from a dry throat.
It's just a small knife. It had venom on it, Nona. It's eating at me. I can feel it in my bones. Wait!
Nona fumbled in her habit, her fingers clumsy with grief.
I've got the black cure.
She brought the vial out.
Little Nona.
Kettle's old smile returned.
Where in the world? I made it.
Nona twisted the cap.
You've got to drink it.
Kettle gave a weak grin.
I'd rather drink ditch water. You should throw that away. It's dangerous stuff, even when not made by novices. But I'm a sister of discretion, Nona. I've already taken the black cure. I took it when I first saw her. It's why I'm still alive. But it's not enough.